everybody. I'm Pam Stack, your tech tonight. This is Noir on the Radio, live. I want to introduce your host tonight is Michael Poole. Michael is an author. He is also a host on this show every other month. He also is a host with Noir at the Bar in the Seattle area. He is also the publisher of Crime Syndicate magazine. I present now Michael Poole. Michael, take it away.
Great. Thank you very much, Pam. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Noir on the Radio. This is my second time hosting, so hopefully I'm going to make this pretty smooth. We've got five pretty awesome writers on the line tonight to read to you guys. Eric Pruitt, Marianne Miles, Ed Cook, S.W. Loudon, and hopefully Dietrich Kaltheis. We're having a little bit of trouble getting a hold of him right now because of some technical difficulties, but we're hopefully going to get him on the call here pretty quick. So with that in mind, I'm just going to go ahead and jump right in and introduce our first guest. Eric Pruitt is a screenwriter, author, and filmmaker living in Durham, North Carolina. With his wife Lana and his cat Busey, his short films Foodie and Liana on Command have won several awards at film festivals across the U.S. His short fiction is in the Avalon Literary Review, Pulp Modern, Thuglit, and Zimble, to name a few. In 2015, he was a finalist for the Derringer Award with his short story Knockout. His novels Dirtbag and Hashtags are available in both ebook and paperback. He's the host of the radio show The Crime Scene with Eric Pruitt. And he also hosts the Noir at the Bar series in Durham, North Carolina. You can find a full list of his credits at ericpruitt.com. But right now, I want to welcome Eric to the show. So thanks for coming on, Eric.
Thank you very much, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I can't complain. I can't complain a bit. Thank you.
So I'm just going to go ahead and turn it over to you. And
wait
you
one second. Before you get started, if anybody has the radio show link on, turn it off because we're getting a feedback. Sorry about that, guys. I should have said that to you before the show started. So if you're listening to the show while you're reading, you're going to cause an echo. It's all yours, Eric.
Thank you very much. Do I just start reading?
Yeah, what's the name of your show?
Just introduce your story and then just...
Yeah.
All right, excellent. Hey, I got a short story here. It's called Love That Don't Quit. It was published in a little horror magazine called The Haunted Traveler. We're looking at Volume 2, Issue 1. So, yeah, this is a dirty little ditty. I hope you dig it. All right, we ready?
Yep.
1 minute, you're at the dollar store, inspecting cost-effective cleaning supplies. Next minute, you're sitting rigid in a straight-back chair at a table finely dressed. Top dollar cutlery, unfit china. The smell is something freshly hunted and roasted from a kitchen on the other side of the wall. Brief flashes of the woman cooking, singing Good Night, My Love, perhaps a bit off-key. Have you been drugged? You catch flashes over as she crosses the kitchen from one side to the other. As she claims and scrapes and gathers, you check out the rest of the room. Look for quick egress. Door just over your shoulder. Door to your right. But she enters the room, blonde once, holding fast to her figure which long ago abandoned her. You imagine the best of her savings frittered away so the makeup chops spackled upon her face. Still, you find no fault in yourself for fancying her. Not tonight, at least. As soon as you remember how you got there. I still remember if you like shaking her hand, she says in a sing-song voice. So I made both. You blink two or three times. Do you know her? How much time passed between here and that dollar store? Sure, you drink your fair share, but... Speaking of, she hands you a bourbon. Rocks. A splash of water. Just like you like it, she says, as if reading your mind. You shake off a shiver, sniff the glass, then swallow. Say, do we know each other? Her lips purse, as if she just sucked a lemon, but only briefly. As if changing a song on the radio, her smile returns, a dead, distant smile. Who really knows anyone, she says. She sets the drink in front of you, and you sip carefully from it, especially after all this time. What, do we use to screw? Not your best joke, sure. You can tell by the way her fingers squeeze in the fist, maybe she don't appreciate your sense of humor. She closes her eyes. She counts to 10. I wish. She stops herself before starting again. I wish. Her fingers unclench. She opens her eyes. Again, she smiles. You're being silly, she says. Of course we know each other. From where? We got plenty of time to catch up over dinner, she says as she kisses the top of your head. She returns to the kitchen, saying over her shoulder, I'm almost through in here, so enjoy your drink. It'll only be a moment. Windows along the far wall, just beyond, it's dark outside, which strikes you funny, since it's daylight when you last remember things back at that dollar store. Excuse me, you call toward the kitchen. Can you remind me where we met? She ducks her head around the corner. She laughs at a joke only she understands, then returns to her work. You've seen that look before, the one in her eyes, that smile. Maybe not on her specifically, but in women. Crazy bitches. That moment a chick goes from something mysterious to something other. When she first realizes she can't have you, but why not? She gets everything else she wants, so why should she be any different? That look that says everything she does is justified. The trips past your house, the phone calls well into the night, the following you here and there, the key scratches on your car. You found yourself in enough fixes over the years and don't aim to end up in yet another. So you quietly push the chair from the table. You stop for just a second, hearing her still busying herself in the kitchen, then start again for the door. Better safe than sorry, you tell yourself. Where are you going? You freeze. You turn and face her. She's 31 flavors of hurt. You have to be somewhere, you tell her. I should have, but I spent all afternoon in the kitchen, she tells you. You don't appreciate all I do for you. You never have. Look, you tell her. Maybe you and me ain't such a... I wish you wouldn't leave. 1 minute, you're standing upright. Next minute, you're sprawled on the floor, arms askew this way and that, and your legs. Where are your legs? You open your mouth. Where the bloody fuck are your legs? She's on top of you, arms crooked below yours, lifting you from the floor and dragging your torso back to the straight back chair, mumbling something about how you should have listened, you should have loved, shut up. All you can hear is the screaming from where once were your legs, and soon you realize, dang, where the screaming comes from. No, screaming comes from you. You'll feel much better once you finish your drink, she tells you. Funny, she don't look that strong, but she manages you back into that chair. Despite the absence of legs, you are seated upright, kept there thanks to bungee cords, and you can't drink that cocktail fast enough. Will you please tell me what is happening? Your cheeks burn with tears. Will you please tell me how I got here? Can you tell me what the fuck happened to my legs? She smiles as she spoons out lumps of mashed potatoes onto each of your plates. 3 wishes, she says. Do what? I was given 3 wishes. She pours more bourbon into your glass. Funny, I know, I didn't believe it either. But I've always been told if you want something bad enough, if you can picture it in your head. But why? I've always loved you, she said, even though I knew I was just a one-night thing for you. This is impossible. Eat your dinner. Enjoy. You struggle to remain upright, sliding down in your seat. This is insanity. This is crazy. She smiles. I really wish you would enjoy spending more time with me. 1 minute, you're moaning and miserable. Next minute, that's the end.
All right. Thank you, Eric.
Awesome.
Right.
Good job.
So Eric, real quick, you're not on speakerphone by chance, are you?
What's that?
You're not on speakerphone by chance, are you?
I'm not on what?
On
are you
speakerphone
by chance?
Yes, I am on speaker.
Okay, anybody's on a speakerphone.
Will you kick that off for me?
Yeah, everybody turn off speakerphones, please. Makes it too hard to hear you. Okay, cool. Eric, are you there now?
Yes, I am. I'm struggling to get off speaker. I'm not technologically advanced. I'm working on it.
Well, you work on that. Maybe, Michael, let's,
okay,
let's go
done.
To our next
I'm off speaker.
Oh, okay, cool.
They are
so,
much
easier
to hear you now.
All right, cool. So, Eric, real quick, while I've got you here, what are you working on right now?
Me? I'm finishing up with a third novel in the hands of the beta readers. So hopefully someone will tell me that it's good enough to send off to a person.
You know, what's it about?
It's about drugs and the search for identity with a lot of guns, hookers, and fire trucks. It's called The Jack-Off.
The Jack-Off. That's awesome. That sounds a lot like Hashtag, actually, in some ways. That's great. So also, I know that you host the Noir at the Bar down at Raleigh-Durham. How long have you been organizing them, and what are your favorite parts of the events?
Well, for me, basically, it's the best part is I get to get a lot of readers from out of town that otherwise I wouldn't have the pleasure of seeing. So, you know, like if you were there for the one at the BoucherCon, I got the great opportunity, you know, to finally get to listen to Johnny Shaw, Jed Ayers, Tom Pitts, Christoph Faust, you know, all these great guys and girls read that I'd always wanted to hear. So that's pretty cool. And I like doing that in Durham. We usually get a pretty good collection of folks from surrounding states. We've actually got one. We just announced it last weekend. It's going to happen in Atlanta. Ed Brock, the author of Pale and Death, asked me to help him get together a lineup for Atlanta. So we've got some really good ones. Briefly, we've got James Tuck, myself, Ed Brock, Alex Sizak, who publishes Pulp Modern, Grant Jerkins, Peter Ferris, coming out of seclusion, and Warren Moore and Ashley Irwin flying all the way in from L.A.
Wow.
That's rad.
Very
well,
cool, you've
man.
Got something
well,
else going on. Wait a minute. I have a question. You have something else coming up, don't you, Eric?
And next month, even better, we're going to do one of these shindigs with the Noir on the Radio, and this one's all Southerners, which is going to be lots of fun. We've got Ed Brock, Ed Kurtz, Jamie Mason, Greg Barth, S.A. Cosby, myself, and Jordan Harper.
It's going to be a great lineup.
Very cool.
Thanks, Eric.
Very, very cool. Cool, Eric.
Oh, no,
well,
thank
you very
y'all.
Much. We'll hear from you again at the end of the program when we open up the callers and things like that. In the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and bring the next reader to the stage. Marietta Miles has published stories with Thrills, Kills, and Chaos, Flash Fiction Offensive, Yellow Mama, Revolt Daily. She's also been included in the anthologies through Static Movement Publishing and Horrified Press. Visit MariettaMiles.blogspot.com or Facebook for more stories or further information. Her first book, which just came out today, is a doubleheader of novellas called Route 12. She was born in Alabama, raised in Louisiana, and currently resides in Virginia. Marietta, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi. Sound like a song.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? And your birthday was yesterday.
I'm doing well.
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. So I'm just going to go ahead and turn it over to you, and you just kind of tell us what you're reading and jump right in.
All right. This is actually an introduction to one of the characters in the second novella of the release that came out today, Route 12. And this is in the South in the early 60s. So, like John the Jesus, I tell you, you are always such a help. The Reverend rubs his eyebrows while he speaks into the phone. His thin, manicured pinky traces over a scar etched over his brow. He sounds like he's smiling, but his face is straight like death. What would we do without you, Vernon? Pastor Friend's eyes close as he adds the confirmation. His deacons respond enthusiastically to kind gratitude. They work harder, jump higher. Hanging up, he feels satisfied with the arrangements. He hears the branch of a magnolia scratch the window as the wind kicks up. Jennifer, he calls through the open door of his office. Yes, Pastor Friend? Jennifer, head nurse at the church clinic for over 2 years, is efficient, quick, and when necessary, callous. An older divorcee, she has nothing to distract from First Baptist Church's mission. To be honest, Friend doesn't mind her broad, soft curves either. Call me Daniel, he says. He didn't always go by Pastor Friend. His people used to call him Little Danny Friend. When he was only 5, he would sing Down by the Riverside to his mother Esther Ray and all her wide-hip, big-bosomed friends during their weekly pinochle, bridge, and canasta games. They clucked so loudly and so heartily, she carried him to every church within a 6-county radius, churning her way to the reverend and aggressively perching her boy on steps or stage, nagging him to sing. She believed he must be special. He must be a gift. He only needed a great big bow, for people just love to be near him. Look at him in his tiny suit, such a good young man. Women of the congregations would coo and the men would chuckle, patting him on the back. Old people and grown-ups, always dressed in their Sunday best, wanted to eat him with a spoon. He would preach with uncommon energy, testify. He was a tornado twisting, a force of nature. I don't know much. I am blind and I cannot hear, not really, not truly, not as our Father wants us to hear, not as he wants us to see. He would stamp his feet. I am only a child, you see, but aren't we all? He asked sweetly into the microphone, and the Lord is our Father, and I feel him here today, and I think he wants us to sing. Buzzing and electric, alive with the spirit, the congregation would stand and call out with joy, singing through the roof, witnessing. Perfectly shined shoes would take him across the stage. He would lift his hands to the heavens, cup-like baskets filling with manna. Even the meanest old man could not resist the halo of light surrounding the boy. He had the way of a grown man in the face of an angel. And, of course, there was the scar. Everyone in the flock nattered on about his scar. Rumors were thick about Daniel and his mother. He was so devoted, so dedicated to her, he simply refused birth, or so folks said. Esther Ray suffered with the big, hungry baby inside her for nearly 2 weeks after his expected delivery. Even when her body prepared for labor, the boy never presented. No longer amused, her doctor rushed through a cesarean, using force and forceps to tug him from high inside her belly. Because of the trauma, he bears a shiny bruise in the shape of a horseshoe over his right eye. Ever since, mother and son have always lived close, so tight and in tune. They shared the same bed until he was a teen, huddled under her red rose comforter. Never thinking it odd, she took it as a loving commitment to his mother. Only a few times did he try to hold her the way a husband holds a wife. Always, of course, she rebuffed his eager mistakes. He made do keeping one hand on her hip, and every now and then, after she was asleep, one hand on her breast. He had always been different, even a little odd, but he sure could fill pews at Goshen's. Done.
Wow. Awesome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's really great. I've had the chance to read... I've had the chance to read the first novella in the book, but I haven't actually gotten to that one yet, so that was a cool little preview for me as well.
Rob Man. Pierce likes that one. He likes that one.
Yeah, it would. He would. Rob Pierce would love that story. Of course he does.
Rob is a savage editor. He edited my novella as well as both of Marietta's. So she knows firsthand just how sinister he is with cutting words.
Oh, yes. Touched by the hand.
There you go.
Exactly. So, you know, while we're on the subject, I know Route 12 did come out today. Or Route 12, rather. I'm pronouncing that wrong. Why don't we talk a little bit about what went into writing the book?
Oh, gosh. Well, I can tell you a little bit about what I just read from. That came to mind. One of the first things that I thought of when I was writing that is the sort of famous story here in Richmond and in Virginia about the love versus, or Virginia versus love, and interracial relationships. And for some reason, that played a huge part in just sort of surrounding the story as I wrote it. And they were an amazing couple, and their story is amazing, and I know that there's a lot of people interested in it right now, but it was a part of it for me.
Interesting. Very cool. So with that in mind, I'm going to ask
I want to ask Marietta a question. Marietta?
Yes.
Since, you know, you're one of our first, we've had a couple women on, but of course you and I have been talking for a while.
Yes.
How about you come back and host a Noir on the radio on April 26th, and you be the host for Dames in the Dark?
I like that very much.
Okay, girl, I'll be in touch with you, okay?
Yes, ma'am, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Marietta.
Thank you.
You know, and so I have one more quick question for you as well, Marietta. Given that you did just have a book come out today, I'm going to ask you kind of the dreaded debut author question, which is, what are you working on now?
Ah, see, the second that Mike said that he liked the story, I went immediately into writing because I knew if I didn't, I have to have some sort of confidence in order to write. And so I ride that wave hard while I have it. So I immediately started writing it. And it's another piece set in the 70s. And it's another lady who kind of takes the hardships of chickhood and kicks a little ass and comes out better. So that's about it.
So I'm assuming when you say Mike that you're referring to Mike Monson over at All Due Respect Books, correct?
Mr. Monson.
Very cool.
Yes. And Chris Radigan, yes. Amazing.
Yeah, they're great. Awesome. Well, we'll be back to talk to you again at the end of the show.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Awesome. So I'm going to move forward now, and I'm going to kind of shift my lineup to hopefully get past some technical difficulties, and we'll see if he's on the line here really quick. The next reader is going to be Dietrich Kalpathe. Dietrich, are you on the line right now?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Perfectly.
Yeah.
Oh,
yay.
Hey, there we go.
So good.
Woo-hoo.
A few tech troubles all the way from Canada.
It's an awesome connection, too. Thank you.
Oh, good. All right.
So
yeah.
I'm
going to
throw your bio
down never.
Really quick. Definitely. I was very worried about this, so I'm very glad to hear your voice. Dietrich Kalpathe, The Deadbeat Club was Dietrich Kalpathe's second novel, released by ECW Press in October 2015. His third novel, Triggerfish, will be released in June 2016. His debut novel, Ride the Lightning, won the bronze medal in the 2015 Independent Publisher Awards for Canada West Regional Fiction and was hailed as one of the best Vancouver crime novels. More than 40 of his short stories have been published internationally, and a screenplay, Between Jobs, was a finalist in the Los Angeles Screenplay Festival. Find him online at dietrichkalpathe.blogspot.com. Thank you very much for coming on, Dieter.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Definitely. And I'll just let you jump right in, man. You just do your thing.
Okay, well, I'm going to read the first chapter of The Deadbeat Club, and just to give you a little background, the story takes place up in Whistler, and it's about a guy who takes over the family business after his uncle passes away, and the business is growing pot. And he grows a strain that is a big hit among the tourists and locals, and pretty soon everybody's trying to get their hands on it, including two rival gangs who are coming up from Vancouver to take over the trade and push him out. So the chapter's called Gang Bang, and I'll just jump right in. The Hummer rolled off the Portman Bridge and took the number one, turning onto East Hastings into bumpy Roscoe's turf. Nat Pooty sat in back, hidden by the tinted glass, laughing at something Beesh Kumar, the kid driving, said. The kid hadn't stopped talking since they drove up from the armpit of the city. Nat put it down to first-time jitters, remembering his own first time. It was his sway that got the kid coming along. Nav thinking he was ready, sticking him behind the wheel of the Hummer, letting him drive, letting him get a taste. The other two were hard guys, Rajiv and Rosh Ramin, guys he would stake his life on. Rajiv grinning from the passenger seat, Rosh clapping the kid on the back. Going to take out one of Bumpy Roscoe's meth labs, a case of tit for tat. The Indo Army coming for payback for the grow up Roscoe's people fragged a week ago. A pipe bomb tossed through a window left two of theirs dead, $20,000 of weed and equipment destroyed. It was an old rotting trailer by the tracks behind the grain terminal along the waterfront, drums and pallets stacked next to it, graffiti on the front and down the sides. The tip off came from a junkie swearing it was there. Saw with his own eyes, betting his life for a fix. How many you think? Beesh asked. Should be empty, Nav said, knowing it wasn't. What was the point of payback if somebody didn't pay? He told the kid, guys just come and cook, you know, mostly at night. Beesh nodded, driving past the P&E grounds, quiet this time of year, a couple of weeks before Christmas. A jolly Santa on a sign wishing everybody season's greetings. Not a holiday any of them celebrated. Beesh saying, some fat fuck in a red suit comes down a chimney in my hood. He's getting popped for sure. The others grinning. Knobby tires rumbled on the asphalt. It felt good being behind the wheel. The 5,000-pound king of the road. Beesh rhyming off the street names as they passed. Slocum, Penticton, Kamloops, Nanaimo, eyes straight ahead. Nav knew the kid's hands were wet on the wheel, the Ruger heavy under his jacket. Far cry from pitching for the Surrey Chiefs. best closer the team had ever seen, but not good enough to get him into the minors. Fuck that. Beach was moving on, wanting to get his tat, the scorpion they all had on their right hand, the tail curling around the wrist. Nav told him to make a write-up ahead. Rosh stuck a magazine in the Kalashnikov, checking it over. The half crate of C-13 grenades under his foot. Green globes packed with C-4. Asking Beach if he ever pitched one of these babies. Pulling right across the plate. It got Beach laughing, saying he wouldn't mind. Coming up on Victoria, calling the street name, Beach slowed for the light, amber to red. Nav telling him not to beat it, keep it cool, repeating for him to hang a right. A female cyclist drew even, waiting for the light. Rosh and Rajiv checking her out. It was a white upright bread truck on the opposite corner that got Nav's attention. The blue and green logo on the back, the four ways flashing. The driver getting out, adjusting his cap and tapping the side with his hand, going around the back and lifting the rear door. A bread truck parked in front of a Scotiabank, across from a Petro-Can station. Neither business carrying bread. Nav caught it a second too late, pulling his pistol, yelling for the kid to make the turn. The back door of the bread truck rolled up and a second man, older than the one with the cap, hopped down out of the back, raising an RPG to his shoulder. Stepping into the street from away from the truck, putting the Hummer in the crosshairs. The man smiled around a bagel he had in his mouth. The cyclist shouted something and tried to move. Grabbing the door handle, Nav threw himself from the Hummer, the rocket striking the grill, blowing the truck off the pavement, lighting up East Hastings. The half case of C-13 grenades adding to the blast. Last thing Nav remembered was an axle dropping in front of him. Somebody yelling. Pain and the smell of skin and hair. Then nothing. That's it.
Wow.
That was great.
Great.
Amazing. This is an amazing story.
So, you know, I picked up the Deadbeat Club at VoucherCon this year, and I read it on the flight home. The flight back to Seattle was like 5 or 6 hours, and I ended up reading the whole book on the flight, and I can tell you that, like, from the point where he leaves off right here, that book just goes crazy. And what I really like about it is it's got some seemingly average Joe protagonists that are really caught in with these just crazy, violent criminals, and they have to resort to a lot of kind of wacky, you know, almost like PG tactics to deal with these guys, which is really great. So I just wanted to say I really love that book. But
thank you, Michael.
Definitely. And, you know, on that note, I was kind of hoping that maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the inspirations that went into writing it. You know, the characters, are they based on people? Or, you know, there's always these little half-truths that kind of make their way into our books. So I thought maybe I'd have you talk about that.
Okay. Well, you know, the idea originally, I think when I started the first book, and the theme sort of carried over the you know, the BC Bud thing, you know, the illegal grow ops in the province. And I remember I read something in one of the papers here about the number of grow ops, you know, in BC, and it was something like they guesstimated 30,000, and that works out to like one in every 100 homes. And I was walking my dog, and I was thinking, you know, like just sort of walking for a better part of an hour, like we must have passed 3 grow ops by now. And I don't know, everything I write sort of has that sort of bent sense of humor in it. And that was just sort of, you know, the jumping off point for me. And I just found a character to drop into it and just started writing. And that's basically how it came about.
Very cool. Yeah, there's definitely some really humorous characters in the book that, you know, some things that have happened to me in the past that made it especially funny for me, I think. But that's really cool to know. So, you know, I also got the chance to read Triggerfish, which is your new novel that's not out yet. And I really love that as well. And I just wanted you to mention really quick, when can we expect to see it on shelves?
June 1st.
Very cool. Well, so everybody look out for that. That's going to be awesome. Really quick, I'm going to pause and turn it back over to Pam, and she's going to do some station identification, and then we'll be right back in the mix.
Thanks. Before we do that, Michael, there's been a caller waiting in area code 305, so I'm going to go ahead and answer. Hi, you're live on the air. Hello.
Hi.
You're
hey,
live
how
on
are
the
you?
Air? Good. Who's
Hi,
this?
How are you? This is Christopher Pimentel.
Okay. How can we help you? You're live on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to talk to E.A. Cook, see how he's doing. He knows who I am.
Okay. He's not on yet. He'll be on in the second half. Would you call back
okay.
then? Okay. Good.
Absolutely.
Call us back.
Tell me what
Thanks.
Time.
If you want to just wait for a few minutes, you'll hear when he reads, okay?
That's perfect.
Don't,
he knows who I
okay.
am. I'm a very well-known
okay,
noir author.
Okay, thanks. Hang on.
All right.
Okay, I'm sorry about that, folks. We were hoping to keep all of our calls later after all the authors have read. But just I want to remind everyone that this is a trademark copyrighted podcast solely owned by the authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. If you'd like to call in and speak to any of our authors, you're welcome to do so. We still have three more authors who are going to read. The number is 347-633-9609. And I want to also remind everyone that this week coming up is going to be a really terrific week. If you're around on Wednesday on Skid Row Chatter with host Tom Pitts, he's interviewing the brilliant James Lee Burke. That's a live show. And then on Friday, I'm speaking to someone on Authors on the Air, literary fiction writer Betty Lee Crosby. So we're back to Mike now. Thanks, Mike.
Cool. Yeah, thank you. And to the person that called in, thank you. And we do look forward to your call here in just a few minutes. We're just going to try to get through these readings first. I apologize. In the first one, we kind of did take calls in the middle, so that was probably a little bit my fault. But no big deal. We'll get to you at the end. Please call back. We're definitely interested in what you have to say. In the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and bring up the next reader, which is E.A. Cook. E.A. Cook has lived a life that rivals the characters he writes about. As a young man, he spent years traveling around North America, covering 43 states and trips over the borders of Mexico and Canada. He traveled by boxcar, hitchhiking, and as a carny, traveling with 8 different shows off and on for 12 seasons. He's worked as a hot dog vendor, a face painter in New Orleans, and has been an account executive for print advertising, owned a private investigation company, and is presently an owner-operator of a taxi by night and a writer by day. He lives in Fort Collins, Colorado. You can find him online at eacookwrites.com. Ed, welcome to the show.
Hello.
How are you, man?
I am fully dressed and in my right mind.
Oh, darn.
You're doing better than me. So I'm just going to turn it over to you, and you just kind of introduce us to what you're going to write and just dive in there.
All right, I'll do that. So I'm going to read to you from the first chapter of a short story. It's called Rusk. That's R-U-S-K. Everything I've written up to this point has the same family line in it, the Romano family out of New Orleans. And this is a historical fiction piece of that family set in 1917 in Storyville in New Orleans, right at the start of World War I. And I'll just begin reading. New Orleans was trying to kill me. But I got up every day and I spit in her face, and then I wiped it off gently and I kissed her cheek. It was a love-hate relationship. After all, without the old girl, I'd be broke. I was a lawyer, a shrink, a priest. I was a cabbie. Storyville and the nearby French Quarter were my bread and butter. Some of the drivers posted by the finer hotels and over by the docks. But they were mostly family men who didn't want the reputation of the red light district to stain them. I was more than stained by Storyville and the Quarter. I was scarred. I didn't pick up strays. I had plenty of business from the brothels, clubs, and dance halls. If somebody needed me, they sent a runner, usually a kid from the neighborhood, to find me. If I wasn't moving, I was always posted on Bienville across from Frank Gurley's saloon. A runner knew that if he waited, I'd be back soon. New Orleans wasn't that big. I like sitting across from Early's on a sweltering summer night, listening to the likes of Jimmy Noon's clarinet or King Oliver's trumpet. And sometimes on a rare, clear winter's evening, I could even pick out the low, smooth bass lines from Pops Foster. On the upbeat tunes, Pops would slap the bass to the beat and the crowd would roar. They called this music jazz, named after jasmine that all the working girls wore, and a smell that permeated any joint that was open at night. Eventually, they started calling it jazz. Whatever. I liked it. Come on, universe. Reach out to me. Sweet T's booming voice rumbled down the street behind me. I checked the side view mirror and saw the blues man stumble a few steps and stop, wave his guitar case at the fog enshrouded gaslight. Leadbill, it gets me so do, and that Jelly Roll Morton, he gets me too. He shuffled up and stopped, even with the passenger side of my Nash, Jeffrey Six. Nash Jeffrey Six. His head hung low and his guitar case rested on his foot. I had the top down and I was enjoying a Bull Durham. I just drew on it and listened to the tin panty piano coming out of Early's. A few moments went by, both of us lost in the crappy music. Hey, Rusk, how you doing, big man? Big man. A lot of people added that tagline. My 6'4", 240 did fill a seat or a doorway. Doing better than I deserve. Oh, come on now. I bet the good Lord sees what you do. Everyone knows the stories about you. He's blessing you because you earned it. We don't know each other. You and God? Right. The old blues man cocked his head and looked at me like I've seen dogs do when they don't seem to understand. I finished my smoke listening to the wheels and hooves of a hansom cab as the carriage made its way around the corner. Dapper Dan was driving, running empty, just taking his time. Sweet T was still looking at me, shaking his head. You are the blues, man. You are the blues. And that's all. The end.
Awesome.
Hey.
Very, very cool.
I like that.
Awesome, man. Thank you very much for
a while. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was just commenting on the jazz. You know, I just love it.
Well, you know, interestingly, my wife's name is Jazz, and people often ask her if it's short for Jasmine, which it's actually not. It's short for Jasper. But I find it interesting that jazz is actually derived from Jasmine, and maybe that's why people make that connection.
Yeah, it's Hooker's perfume.
But, for sure. So, you know, could you remind me again, what was the name of the bloodline that's kind of gone throughout the books that you've written?
Rono,
very cool. Are you working on an... Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Are you working on another book right now, or have you kind of played that all the way out over the years?
I am. I wrote my first book some years ago, and I just sort of blew the dust out of it and brought it out to the public, and I'm writing a sequel to that book. I've written a couple other things since then, but this was my first love, and that's a contemporary crime fiction based in New Orleans, and a couple of my other pieces were historical crime fiction, each one of them connected to New Orleans one way or the other.
Are you, I forget, I didn't see, like, in your bio where you're from. Where did you grow up?
I was raised in Minnesota.
Oh, cool.
I lost the accent somewhere.
My wife's also from Minnesota, and I think you tend to tone it down. It's sort of like the Southern accent. Like, once you leave the South, it starts to fade off a little bit at a time. So I totally get that. Well, cool. Well, thank you for coming on. Stick around. We're going to be back to talk to you again at the end of the program. It sounds like we're going to have a caller that wants to speak to you, so hang around.
Will do.
And I'm going to go ahead and bring up the next reader now, and this is going to be our final reader for the evening, Steve Wadden. S.W. Wadden's debut novel, Bad Citizen Corporation, is available now from Rare Bird Books. The second Greg Salem novel, Grizzly Season, was published in September 2016. His standalone novella, Crosswise, is available February 29th from Down and Out Books. You can find him at www.badcitizencorporation.com. Let's go ahead and bring him up to the stage. Steve, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Definitely, man.
All right, I'm going to jump into a short story. It's a piece of flash fiction called The Seventh Day, and it will actually be published this coming Friday on February 19th by the amazing Shotgun Honey. So this is a little preview of that, and you can check it out at Shotgun Honey on Friday. The Seventh Day. Sunday was great, but Monday is murder. Damn delivery showed up late and nearly got me fired. My boss has never met a problem he couldn't blame on somebody else. That jackass has been freeloading since his daddy died and left him this repair shop. Spends most of his time in the big office upstairs, flirting with Sherry and making promises he can't keep. Same ones I used to make when she was still my girl. Tuesday is terrible. Got served a warrant on my lunch break. Ex-wife number two wants more of the money I don't have. Says they're going to garnish my wages, make me pay what I owe her and more. She just wants her pound of flesh for what I did with Sherry. I wouldn't change a thing if I had it to do over again. You only get a shot at a fine woman like that once in a lifetime. Wednesday is worse. I was too drunk to hear my alarm howling at me. Half the shift was over by the time I rolled in. Boss says he's docking my pay. Told me I'm out on my ass if it happens again. He's probably just mad because he couldn't get it up last night. Asshole's lucky I didn't break his jaw. Remind Sherry what a real man looks like, even if it does cost me my job. And I might just do it, too, if my oldest son wasn't going to be needing braces soon. Thanks for nothing, Thursday. Came in to find out they're cutting my hours. Said my productivity was down or some bullshit like that. Told me I'm taking too many cigarette breaks and drinking too much at lunch. Like I work any slower when I've got a good buzz on. It's just a lame excuse to take my benefits away. Make sure I'm too poor to get back on my feet. It's finally Friday. I'm too damn broke to do anything about it. All I've got is this 20 I took from Sherry's purse. I'm saving that until Sunday. She won't miss it now that the boss gave her that god-awful ring. It's amazing what some women will put up with for a little gold and a couple of diamonds. You should have seen them parading around here like two lovesick teenagers. Took everything in me not to puke up my lunch. Probably the last meal I'll eat all weekend unless my neighbor comes through for me again. I wake up sick on Saturday. Used to be my morning to visit with the kids, back before the restraining order. Most weekends I get up and polish off whatever whiskey's left in last night's bottle. The rest of the day's pretty much a crapshoot after that. Heard my neighbors packing up their minivan earlier, so I'll probably break in over there once the coast is clear. They've got a refrigerator full of beer and frozen burritos out in the garage, and a couple of power tools I can hawk for some blow. I'm still soaring when Sunday rolls around. Feels like the shower's piercing my skin as I try to sober up. Same with the teeth on my comb. One last beer before I rinse with mouthwash. The weekly dance over at the senior center starts at 3 and I want to be on time. I'm probably the worst dancer here every weekend, even though most of the crowd is my parents' age. Reminds me of watching the two of them carry on in the living room when I was a kid. I'd sneak out of bed and spy from the top of the stairs while they laughed and kissed. Those were the good old days. The first lady I waltz with is about the age my mom would have been if she'd survived my dad's beatings. I stick with her for a couple of songs before I decide to mix it up. There's a woman over there that really knows how to jitterbug. She kind of looks like Sherry. Almost makes me forget that tomorrow is Monday.
Very good.
Awesome.
Very nice. I know how hard it is to write in that 700-word limit that they have at Shotgun Honey. It's definitely not easy, so that was great.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Really?
Definitely, man.
Yeah. It was a thing that I had to come around to. The first, I think I got turned down about 10 times by them before they accepted one of my short stories.
Well, Shotgun Honey, if you're out there, you can stop rejecting my stories, too. I've had quite a few of them. That's awesome. That was really great. Thank you for reading it. While I've got you here, I was going to say I've got a copy of Crosswise, which is your new novella, but I haven't read it yet. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it and when it'll be available, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, sure. Down and Out Books is publishing it on February 29th, and it's coming kind of really close on the heels of my debut novel, which was set in Southern California, focused on punk rock and Southern California punk rock in particular, and a guy named Greg Salem, who is a police officer, but then ends up sort of turning basically into a PI to solve a murder of one of his best friends. And it was a very L.A. novel. Then when I was on vacation in Florida, I was just sitting on the porch one morning watching the lightning, you know, break. And I got this idea for a short story that was called Crosswise. And so I wrote it as a short story first. And it came in probably at about 5,000 words. And I showed it to my editor, Elaine Ash, and she, you know, she really encouraged me to kind of flesh it out. And it got to be where it was a novella length. And so she showed it to Eric at Down and Out Books, and they're putting it out here in a couple of weeks.
Wow. That's awesome. It's nice when your editor goes to bat for you and you don't even have to go through the process.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he had gotten rejected a couple of places. I mean, we could spend a whole show talking about rejections for sure. But when she championed it, I kind of really knew I had something, you know, and it gave me a little bit of wind in my sails to actually finish it.
Dude, I think the cover is awesome. Like, I really, every time I see it, I'm jealous of it, actually. So,
you know, what's funny about that is as a writer, I suggested something that was so obnoxious and so, like, trying to be a Florida crime novel, and they went a completely different direction. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, you guys are right. So I was really excited.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Okay, so that's basically all the readings. So I was thinking that what we might do is go ahead and start opening it up to some calls and just sort of getting the whole group in on a discussion. The call-in number, for those of you guys out there listening, is 347-633. No, I'm sorry, that's wrong. 347-633-9609 is the number. So 347-633-9609. In the meantime, Steve, let's go ahead and talk a little bit more about that. What do you mean when you said a very, like, Florida crime novel cover?
It was kind of snarky and jokey and had palm trees and, like, you know, like I made a palm – I drafted a version of the cover that was, like, a palm tree where the fronds were made out of $100 bills and the curving brown tree was made out of, like, cocaine vials, you know, and I thought it was really funny. But they came back with something that is a lot more, you know, spooky and sort of, you know, inviting in a way that I wasn't envisioning. What I was envisioning was something much more cartoonish.
It's weird how that works out, how you have this vision of the cover for your book. And then a lot of times you see something from the publisher that's totally different, but is a lot better in a lot of ways than maybe what you had in mind. It's kind of interesting how that works.
Oh, for sure. You know, the same exact thing happened with Bad Citizen Corporation. I had a very specific idea of what I thought that cover was going to look like. And Tyson Cornell at Rare Bird came back with the cover. He had commissioned a painting from an artist, and I was like, oh, well, that's perfect. So I'm probably going to, you know, for the next book, I'll probably not even make an attempt and just let them tell me what it's going to look like.
For sure. So for some of you other guys that are on the line, I know that several of us here are Noir at the Bar hosts. I kind of organize but don't host the events here in Seattle. We let Will Vajaro do the hosting because he's a little more, I think, personable than me. But I know that, Steve, you're kind of a veteran. I know, Eric, you organize the ones down in Durham. Dieter obviously organizes the ones up in Vancouver as well. I'm wondering if you guys could just sort of chime in with some discussion of what you like about the live events, what you have kind of discovered about yourself as a live reader through the events, just things like that. I'll just open it up. Just identify yourself before you speak.
Well, this is Eric. I got into it originally because, you know, my first book, Dirtbags, was Create Space. So a lot of bookstores wouldn't touch it. You know, they're anti-Amazon and everything with it. So I couldn't get those big nifty readings that some of the bigger authors would get if they don't get a book through CreateSpace. So it was kind of a no-brainer. I kept seeing, like, authors of books that I like. You know, I was a big fan of Peckerwood, and I saw what Jed was doing out in St. Louis, and I actually wrote him up and asked him. I was like, hey, man, how can I get you guys to bring Noir at the Bar over to Durham? And he wrote me back and said, hey, man, you got to start it. You got to do it yourself. And he gave me the number to a bunch of readers that, like, you know, Steve Weddle and Grant Jerkins, that were willing to come out and help me put one on. And then anybody that's read in front of an audience and gets a big reaction knows how, you know, it's an addiction, man. It's kind of like crack. You know, you can't wait till you get the next one. So after that, it was a no-brainer.
That's awesome. So, yeah, I had a similar experience where I didn't know how to get involved, and I sort of sent Todd Robinson, who is the editor at Thuglit, an email, and he kind of said the same thing, like, no one's really totally in control of it. It's sort of a grassroots thing, and if you want one, you got to kind of make it happen. And so I sort of did the same thing.
Yeah, that's what we did up at Vancouver too. And you know, it's just such a great atmosphere, the bar and so on. It just ends up being so much more casual and so much more fun than sometimes a library or a bookstore event.
Definitely. Guys, really quick, it looks like we've got a caller on the line, 510 area code. Is that right, Pam?
Yes, caller, you're live. Who's this?
You're talking to me, it's Rob Pierce, but I'm vicious or savage or something, so who knows?
Mr. Pierce.
Yay! Hi, Rob.
And unlike the last time I called in, rambled for half an hour or something, I just wanted to say hi. I'm looking forward to a whole bunch of books from a few of y'all. Marietta is fantastic. I know that. I already knew about Michael's because I edited both of those. And one quick shout-out to another Noir at the Bar while I'm on the line. San Francisco has one this Thursday. And speaking of people not in control, Joe Clifford's running it. and he's got Rob Hart on his nationwide book tour for City of Rose, I guess. Oh, and mm-hmm. Danny Gardner, David James Keaton, Tom Pitts, William E. Wallace. I thought
wow.
Johnny Shaw was going to be there too, but I don't see him on the latest list.
I don't know. On my page. It's on my page. I'll go ahead and look. Let me see who's got on there.
You know, I know that Rob's making his way down the coast, and he's actually going to be here in Seattle as well tomorrow night. So.
Yeah, hey, Rob,
okay.
A lot of those things.
Joe Clifford, Danny Gardner, Tom Pitts, David James Keaton, Johnny Shaw, Owen LeKagan, Rob Hart, William E. Wallace.
So Johnny and Owen are there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Owen was going to be there too, and his bio's not on the Facebook page, is why I didn't mention those.
Iron and Gold at 3187 Mission Street in San Francisco, Thursday night, February 18th at 7:30 p.m. That's a great lineup. Rob, I'm glad you're
calling.
Yeah,
and you know
that
Danny Gardner is dangerous business.
He is, and usually you're complaining because you never have time to call in because you're not home from work, so I don't want to hear it from you anymore.
Well, you have it on a fucking holiday, which I actually worked but only like 6 hours instead of 10. So, yeah, this one worked better.
Well, you know,
plus I got to be nice to Steve Aladdin because he buys me drinks.
Okay, so it's either going to be 7 o'clock your time and snooze o'clock my time, in which case the show won't happen. So, you know, it's take your pick. Get off work early, chase all your customers out the door, and come home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like living indoors, though.
Okay. All right. Lines are open if you want to call in and speak to the authors. And to Mike Munson, to Rob Pierce. The number is 347-633-9609. Tell you what, next person to call in who isn't part of this crowd, I will gift you a book of your choice. The number is 347-633-9609. You can choose from any one of these wonderful authors who read with us tonight. Mike, back to you.
Great. You know, so while we're all throwing the Noir at the Bar plugs down, we do have an event tomorrow night here in Seattle as well. I sort of feel like it's the inadvertent launch of the West Coast Book Tour for Rob Hart and Owen and for Johnny. It sounds like they're hitting a few of them down the coast. So we're pretty excited. I know Dieter, you're also going to be there. Sam
yep.
Weeb is going to be there. It's going to be great. So.
Hey, Mike, this is Steve. I would just plug also that next Sunday, a lot of those same names are going to be reading at the Noir at the Bar in L.A. Owen, Johnny Shaw, S.G. Redling, myself, Tom Pitts, Rob Hart. I'm thrilled Patricia Abbott's going to be there, and Eric Beatner. So we've got a really good lineup on the 21st in L.A. as well.
Well, why doesn't someone tell me how to do this? I want to do something like this in Florida.
in Southwest Florida. So, I mean, I can find a bar and I can find people to go. I just need to find authors. How do I do that?
You want to talk to Alex Sizak, the Pulp Modern editor. He's down in Florida and he's been looking to put one together as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Will someone send him
Eric
a PM?
Eric Campbell from Down and Out Books as well.
All right, would you contact them for me and have them find me? You can give them my deets, okay?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd love to do something like that because I certainly know enough people that I'll be able to do this. Okay?
I'm cool. Doing it right now.
You know, Pam, I'll throw it out there. It's really not too hard. You guys that are out there kind of listening right now, you live in a city or you live in a, you know, 100,000 person town or whatever it is, and you're thinking, well, that's all cool, but there's no noir at the bar where I live. It really isn't that hard. It's really fun, and it's really, like, worth putting the time into to organize and do. I mean, some of the best times I've had since I moved here to Seattle have been at these events, and I've made some great friends, and there's really, like, no downside to it. So,
yeah, and have virtual studio, we'll travel, so it works for me. I can go anywhere and do this, and, you know, I'm used to putting on big events, so it's not a problem. Thanks. Just, you know, if you know authors who live in Southwest Florida or Miami or any place and want to come to Southwest Florida for a reading, maybe in Naples, Florida, or even as far north as Tampa, I can arrange all those things. So, perfect. All right. What's next? Michael, back to you.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I want to kind of hear from some of you guys that have been a little quieter on the line. Ed Cook, are you still with us?
I am.
You are. So I know you live in Fort Collins, Colorado. I've spent a few years there myself. It's been a decade ago. It's a great little spot. I'm wondering, have you ever thought about doing events there?
I have. Just, you know, in the last few months, I've been aware of it, watching posts on Facebook and seeing that everybody's digging it. And I think it's a great concept. I'm definitely not the party, though. I've been sober for 19 years, but I know how, but I know where the party is.
For sure, Colorado's kind of got its own version of party anyway. So
yeah, right?
Yeah, we have our own
thing. Amen.
Very cool. Go ahead, Pam.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, we're in our final moments. Any callers coming in, 347-633-9609. Michael Poole is an author. He is an organizer of Noir at the Bar in Seattle. He also is a rotating host for Noir on the Radio, and he is the head honcho for Crime Syndicate magazine. Please go and find him on Facebook or in his on his website, and yes,
Michael
all the emails
Poole.
Are pouring in. Michael Poole, sorry, all the emails are pouring in for Noir at the Bar in Florida. I love that. the next time that that I'm going to talk to you all, Noir on the Radio, will be on Monday, February 29th, Danny Gardner, no, let's see, it's Dames in the Dark with Angel Colon. He's organizing for me, so that should be a ton of fun. Wednesday night, Skid Row Chatter with Tom Pitts presents James Lee Burke. We'll be back with another Noir show, Noir on the Air with Eric on March 14th. And then again, A Dames in the Dark on the 28th with Danny Gardner. You don't think that's going to be a hoot? And in March,
you know, I just wanted to
go ahead.
I wanted to insert as well. We haven't announced it yet, but there's also going to be a live Noir on the Radio from Left Coast Crime
right.
on Friday night of the festival. I don't have the date right in front of me, but
27.
Keep it in mind. I know Steve's going to be there right now. 27th,
that's
I think. Right.
February 27th, yes.
You guys
so that'll
that
be
well.
Left Coast Crime Noir at the Bar. That'll be live, Noir on the air rather. That'll be live. Michael will be hosting that, and probably Steve is going to be hanging around since he's an old hand at watching these things at conferences now. And it should be a lot of fun.
it should be a lot of fun. I think we're going to have it's going to be a great broadcast anyway. So I thank you for hosting again, Michael, and shout outs to all the guests tonight. Thank you for being here. Marietta, you and I are going to talk because you're going to host a Dames in the Dark in April, right?
You got it. Yes, ma'am. Thank
okay,
you so much.
Rob, you're welcome. Rob,
the Dames
I'm
in
glad
the Dark
won't
get anywhere near me.
No, you're not. We're not putting you anywhere near them, Eric. You're just done for. Forget it. We know better than that. So catch up on Wednesday with Skid Row Chatter with Tom. That Tom Pitts is going to be a great show. He's going to be speaking, as I say, to James Lee Burke. He was on my show last week. The man's fascinating. Thank you, authors, for being with us. Michael, the final word is yours.
Great. Yeah, I just want to thank everybody for listening. Thank all you guys for coming on. I really appreciate it. You guys are all fantastic. A couple of you guys I'm going to see soon. I'm looking forward to that. The rest of you guys, I hope to meet you at some point in person. And, yeah, thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a great night.
All right, thank you.
Thanks
Have
for
a great
being
night.
With us. And you too, everybody. And here's our outgoing music, courtesy of Tom Pitts. Good night, everybody, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Night.